Right. Thank you. We've got Commissioner Sweetman here now, so.
Thanks, sir. Can you hear me all right?
Thank you.
Thank you. Just before we kick back into section six of the reply, I just wanted to come back to you, sir, on the New Zealand Infrastructure Commission. So the New Zealand Infrastructure Act establishes the commission, which is a Crown entity also under the Crown Entities Act, and it has an independent board. There isn't a purpose section in the NZ Infrastructure Act, but the functions of the commission are to, statutory functions are to develop and promote an approach to infrastructure that encourages infrastructure and services that result from infrastructure that improve the well-being of New Zealanders.
Promote in the sense of doing what? Writing reports?
They are statutorily required to write to produce a strategy report, section 12 onwards, provide a draft to the minister, and then publish for Parliament to consider.
Right, okay. So it's an advisory Crown entity.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you. That's the first time I've struck that one.
Statutory report.
No, the commission, Infrastructure Commission.
All right. Okay. Yes. So, scope of City Council jurisdiction. So obviously the interface, you've just put your head in your hands.
I'm just preparing a set of questions for you.
Right, good. As a visual cue for me, I'm delighted. I was just about to do the same thing. Clearly, a key issue of lots of discussion throughout this hearing. I think we started to hear more and more language, particularly by the end of the council's presentation. This is complex and tricky and, you know, sort of mind-blowing. I think this all really has become quite, with respect, a little unnecessarily fraught in this hearing, mostly because Kiwi Rail has made the decision not to seek regional consents at the same time. In my submission, I think that's challenged the City Council throughout the process. And it's very clear, certainly to me and throughout the process, that the City Council clearly would have strongly preferred Kia Rail to have lodged regional consent applications concurrently. But reluctantly accepts that KiwiRail doesn't have to do that. Another sort of initial observation, I suppose, from me in relation to this issue, and I should clarify, I'm not at all suggesting that the express overlap of regional and territorial authority functions is not one that is easy. I'm not suggesting that at all, but it's express, and I'll get into that in a minute. But I do think in this process it has been elevated at times, particularly by the City Council team, to something that sort of seems almost too hard to work out. Another observation for me, I suppose, in framing that submission up, is there was, with respect, an astounding response to a question Commissioner Pomare asked of Mr. Arsenault in his presentation that was around trust. And Mr. Arsenault essentially confirmed that what we're sort of being reluctantly asked to do here is trust the regional council, with the deepest respect to a fellow Canadian. Absolutely, we are trusting the region. I was deeply disappointed to find out he was Canadian. I'm kidding, David. But without a doubt, we are asking, I don't suppose we're asking at all, but the proposition is to trust the regional council. And this isn't, in my submission, a sort of trust like you trust that the person in the room next to you is double vaxxed. You're trusting them to comply with their statutory obligations and to do their job. And in my very strong submission, I think it's pretty astounding that there could be any flavor that the city council, really needs to keep an eye on some of these issues, because otherwise they're going to fall through the cracks. So I don't have to tell the folks on this panel who will have extensive years of experience of managing territorial and regional council interface, direct and relevant, frankly, decades of experience, that the functions of those two statutory authorities and how they're set out in the Act. It is evident from the sections, the relevant sections of the Act, that there is an express overlap in relation to some of the functions of territorial and regional councils. And we acknowledge that, for example, natural hazards and Indigenous biodiversity. There are three areas of overlap that in my submission warrant some consideration, and I address those from page 19 in the subs. And of course, they come up again when we talk about conditions.
These issues, dust and hazards in particular, mm-hmm. are quite vanilla subjects, routinely dealt with at the territorial authority stage. I mean, they even if you look at the RPS, which directs you to deal with natural hazards and make sure that infrastructure is put in the right place and all of that, they're all fairly vanilla territorial authority matters.
Yes. Yes, sir. Exactly right. And to my point that some of these overlap issues have sort of taken on a heightened scrutiny in this case. There is clearly the statutory overlap. How that overlap is dealt with, in the natural hazard stance is dealt with in the RPS, but certainly the territorial authority with the role is to manage the effects from the use of land, so as you say, in a very vanilla sense, the management of that interface of control and management of dust effects on amenity, for example. Right. And in the conditions, there is a proposed operational dust management plan in this set of conditions. And QRL considers that is appropriate. QRL is also proposed, which you'll see in the conditions when we get to it, investigations in relation to rooftop rainwater collection. And in my submission, those conditions appropriately address amenity effects that arise and are within that well-worn and understood concept of the City Council's jurisdiction of dust management. The Council also seeks conditions be imposed on a construction dust management plan, construction dust monitoring. Will be well understood by panel members here, particularly for a project of this scale and size. Construction dust will very clearly arise from earthworks undertaken on the site and movement of heavy vehicles associated with those works. There's a scale issue here, sir. In my submission, the district plan appropriately includes provisions relating to earthworks, and the designation, if confirmed, would authorize QRL to undertake small-scale earthworks that would otherwise contravene the district plan. But the sort of rational reality check here is this is not how this site is going to be developed by little piecemeal, tiny little earthworks projects. That's, with respect, preposterous. The scale of this work, those little works would be unlikely to result in material adverse effects on a site of 177 hectares. What we're talking about here is the clear need for earthworks to be undertaken on a much greater scale, which will without a doubt require a bulk earthworks regional consent, which will without a doubt and with a high level of trust in Horizons include a suite of no doubt appropriately onerous dust control.
Can we just pause there? In terms of, I had a look at the regional plan in terms of its controls on land disturbance, which appears to me to be a controlled activity with particular matters of control and conditions associated with it. And what I'm wanting to understand is where dust actually comes into that. So where do we have the surety that construction dust would clearly fall as a matter of control within the regional plan provisions? So I'm not asking you to answer that now because you'll need to do a little bit of research, but if we can come back to that when we're discussing the conditions in particular.
Thank you.
Thank
you. And we'll look at those provisions, those regional provisions, certainly. But again, in a project of this scale and size, in my submission, the management of those specs, if they in fact trigger control, which I anticipate they won't, but we'll look at that, also more efficiently and comprehensively dealt with at a regional level. And I suppose that's another theme around repeating processes, and this comes up in ecology as well, for example, where there's no intent whatsoever that QRL would see, and you know, I know you're not saying this at all, Commissioner Sweetman, but no intent at all by the requiring authority to try to ensure the management of effects slips through the cracks in some way, and that's not the thrust of your question at all. But in my view, that would be most efficiently understood, managed, and dealt with, again, as more detailed work is done on the level of earthworks that need to be done and how the site is actually going to be earthworked and managed. But we'll come back to you on that particular point.
So just clarifying that in my mind, wasn't there a condition with a number of conditions that had extensive dust management controls that you accepted?
In relation to operational dust, yes.
But not
construction dust.
Construction dust.
Correct.
Right. So that's the lacunae that Commissioner Sweetman's talking about.
Indeed. So then when we turn to another asserted level of, I suppose, overlap or concern from the City Council in relation to ecology in the context of freshwater. I think here, again, it is, well, I say probably clearer in the sense that the function of TAs in the context of freshwater is limited under Section 31.1A. To control of effects in relation to surface of water, as we know, and regional councils, on the other hand, have a much broader role in the management of fresh water. And the City Council acknowledges that the regional council has primary responsibility in relation to the management. The overlap issue appears to come in relation to the management of Indigenous biodiversity, and that has been considered in that High Court matter, which, sir, you will be familiar with, property rights in New Zealand v. Manawatu Whanganui Regional Council, where the High Court held that a regional council may make rules for the purpose of maintaining Indigenous biodiversity, the court said that the existence of what it called the functional overlap between the role of TAs and regional councils in relation to this matter exists. It was expressly anticipated by Parliament, and that's at Section 62, that it is the regional council through its RPS that is to decide what the local authority, i.e. the regional council or the TA, that is to be responsible for specifying the OBS poles and methods for the control of the use of land to, in this case, maintain Indigenous biodiversity. So the one plan here, it's now policy 6-1, not 7-1 as it was in that case, divides the regional council and TA functions as follows. The regional council must be responsible for developing provisions to manage land use in a way that maintains Indigenous biological diversity and protects areas of significant Indigenous vegetation, and the TA must be responsible for retaining schedules of notable trees. The policy does also note that clearly everybody has Part 2 obligations, and the City Council appears to be leaning particularly on that limb in relation to the City Council's position on the ecology, proposed ecology conditions. But the High Court in that case I mentioned notes that the one plan policy, the exact policy we're looking at here, seems to contemplate the regional council having overarching responsibility for Indigenous biodiversity and that TAs have a subordinate role.
Well, the on this topic, I'm in a different position on the dust. I think that dust is absolutely crucial for a territorial authority to manage, and typically does more so than regional councils in the development of land. But in biodiversity, the functions of a territorial authority are in Section 31. And as far as we know, the Palmerston North District Plan does not perform any function under Section 31, brackets 1, brackets B, brackets 3. And the question is, would we depart from that practice and start setting conditions on Indigenous biodiversity in performance of that function? And one of the factors that would influence that is whether there is another framework done by somebody else that is fit for purpose, and the other is, do we have conditions that could do that job?
Well, my submission, sir, this is, you know, where it hits in relation to the condition, which again we'll get to, is a proposal by the City Council for extensive ecological surveys to be carried out on a raft of matters such as stream classification, vegetation assessments, water quality matters. And in my submission, that is an uncomfortable step into regional council matters. Again, the shadow we're boxing at here isn't some sort of nefarious plot by the requiring authority to not grapple with these issues. Rather, it's very clearly a regional council matter, in my view. And so to, again, one of those other themes of efficient, certain, and comprehensive condition development and planning is that that should be properly done and not in a repetitive or duplicative way, where, in fact, arguably the risk of things falling through the cracks could be worse if there's a lack of clarity in terms of who's watching these things.
It seems to me, and from my understanding of the City Council's position, a lot of their concern was regarding potential changes that might ensue in terms of the design of the freight hub as well. So what's your comment in that regard? So, you know, my understanding is they wanted to front-end a lot of this in terms of providing certainty that there wouldn't be subsequent changes and changes in effects arising. your comments on that?
Great question. Thank you. And we talk in a minute. Well, the reply talks about some of the concerns by the city council ecologists, for example, around, again, it's this theme of gaps in information or not an assessment as I would have done it. And in my submission on that point, very clearly you have sufficient evidence before you to endorse proceeding in the way QRL has. What your question also very clearly touches on is, again, another one of these threads or themes for this case is the City Council's discomfort with where information is at this moment in the context of a notice of requirement, a designation, and subsequent processes that will refine and develop this thing. And that includes a whole bunch of stuff, and such as regional consents, OPWs, management plans, further detailed design, actually getting on site to land that you own and are able to access. And I think, you know, with respect, and I acknowledge that discomfort from some areas in the City Council team and the reporting planner of that, you know, we need as much information as we possibly can now. We don't have it, so let's put in a whole bunch of detailed, highly detailed consent conditions. KDRL has taken a different approach, and in my submission, the KDRL and its experts' approach ensures a significant level of detail actually is provided, more than you might see in that sort of black box designation. But it also realistically and I think authentically acknowledges that more detailed work is going to have to come. Now, it comes up again, ma'am, in relation to noise, doesn't it? Where there's that tension around, well, let's set our future contours now. We need them in this designation now, so everyone knows that now. And the QRL approach there is, well, we can lock in some hard limits. We'll get to noise in a sec, but we can't. It would be disingenuous to the community to say this is what's happening here for the next 50 years.
Thank you.
I'm not sure, though, you answered Commissioner Sweetman's question, and I'm interested in the answer, which is, and perhaps we need to relate it to a particular condition, but I think the proposition being advanced was that the council's conditions, in a sense, provided a baseline information about the effects through the process that, to some extent, provides a framework for understanding the dimensions of this proposal as opposed to performing a regional function. And as I understood the question is, did you see some value in doing that as part of a condition and designation? I'm not sure if I captured that correctly, but...
Thank you. I thought I'd answered Commissioner Sweetman's question, and she said thank you. She doesn't say thank you if you don't answer her question. But in relation to that proposition, the sort of baseline, you know, more baseline information, please. I suppose my response would be in a question posed as a question as well. Why? Why do we need that information, which comes at cost to and is based on, you know, is in my submission unnecessary? Why is that further additional information needed by the City Council now in relation to understanding the effects of this notice of requirement? And my submission to you is in relation to, for example, ecology, you have sufficient information, expert information and expert assessment and analysis, which says, and we'll get to this in a minute, but on the basis of the work that QRL's expert ecologist has done, says, well, I'm confident for example, ecological effects when we get to earthworks and the like will be able to be managed. More work needs to be done at that regional council phase to understand what that looks like. And the appropriate place to do that is at the regional phase.
Okay, thank you.
I'll just, neither of you probably got it quite right in terms of what my question was, so I probably phrased it not very well. Do you think part of the City Council's concern is the need for future changes to the designation itself?
Right. Like when it wants.
Yeah.
Well, that is an interesting question, and I think it may be. I mean, what I've grappled with respect in trying to unpack the concern and also the real discomfort with, you know, some aspects of KiwiRail's approach is around this sort of nervousness about the regional council's role, nervousness about things falling through the cracks. But conceivably, also a nervousness could be, is this thing going to change on us? Now,
well, that would be my observation, particularly in terms of things like the culverting and the fish passage, I hate that word, and the extent of natural wetlands as well, and the ability to offset and compensate, is certainly the impression that I've got
from it.
And what's the what is the implication of the regional council consenting process potentially, and more restrictions that come out of the national policy statement on freshwater management and the national environmental standard on freshwater, which we know is quite restrictive, less so for specified infrastructure. Is that where the council might be coming from? Is those concerns about that lack of certainty from future processes that might and will likely impact on the final concept design of the freight hub?
Thank you, ma'am. That's deeply insightful. And I think my response to all of that would be that with the, you know, we all live in a terrifically uncertain world. I couldn't even tell you what's happening tomorrow in my house, let alone, you know, what's happening. I don't want to cry again. That was embarrassing enough. But with respect, that sort of boxing at shadows, even if they're likely shadows, is a totally inappropriate approach to take. You are required to assess and consider the thing before you. And, you know, it's a truism that things change. KiwiRail's case is here before you, that you have quite a detailed concept design and quite a raft of conditions, you know, more than maybe KiwiRail might in other constructs be comfortable with. But in fact, that gives more than sufficient certainty to you, to the community, and to the city council about what's happening here. That's not to say that things might not change as folks get on the site. I mean, you've been involved, ma'am, you mentioned, and we know the project you've been involved in, where actually we get on the land and you need to look at things differently. That is a truism of a large project. We can't, in my submission, guard against that. In a way that is, in the way, if that's in fact the incentive of the city council, and that is an observation I actually hadn't picked up on, but that's an interesting one. We can't. It would be hopeless for you to be put in a position, or the requiring authority to be put in a position, where we're trying to absolutely future-proof this set of conditions in a way to guard against any changes over the next 50 years. That's impossible. Did that answer your question?
Yes, it did. Thank you.
Sir?
No, Commissioner Sweetman has said she's happy, and I'm happy with that too.
I'm writing that down. I'm already terrified about when we start to go through the table. but in a good way. I'm terrified in a good way. Right. Natural hazards, pardon me. Context of the One Plan, there's a shared responsibility for those matters, territorial authority being responsible for developing provisions to control the use of land to avoid or mitigate natural hazards, except those matters which are in the regional council's responsibility, which is essentially around the CMA and water. Ms. Cobbleston has outlined those various matters. Ultimately, City Council and Kiwi Rail experts agree around stormwater and flooding. General agreement between stormwater experts around the assumptions and all the rest of it. General alignment on the appropriateness of the stormwater and flooding effects conditions, which you'll see in a minute, require preparation of a stormwater management report and a stormwater management and monitoring plan. We've also agreed with the City Council in relation to the imposition and the proposed conditions around the preparation of a geotech report. And that is included in the conditions as well. In terms of the matter that it also was raised in the City Council's legal submissions around essentially the consideration of regional effects under 171, along the lines of what we've just been talking about for the last few minutes. Counsel for the City Council says that the panel must consider potential future effects which may arise as a result of or will be the subject of future regional consents, because the freight hub cannot proceed in its current form without allowing the requirement and allowing the activity under Section 104. However, the City Council also accepts that the nature of the inquiry into regional consenting effects is more limited because there's still a future process to go through. Now, my submission, the approach here is, firstly, your inquiry must be on the, quote, requirement before you, the application before you, and that's the thing you must make your recommendation on. Your inquiry must be focused on the effects that would be authorized through this designation if confirmed. And as we know, designation being a district planning tool, those effects are centered on the land use component of the proposal. It's appropriate for you to consider the potential regional consenting pathways available to Kiwi Rail, and that arises in my submission by virtue of the requirement in 171 to have particular regard to, among other things, the regional policy statement.
This is where I slightly lost you, and I've got a note in my submissions. And it's the words regional consenting pathways. Regional consenting pathways are typically found in regional plans, and what we're required to consider is the RPS, and you wouldn't typically consider consenting pathways and it would deal with that in an RPS. And perhaps the reason the RPS is mentioned as opposed to regional plans is because that's the function of that document is to give you the strategic overview of the direction of the region, which includes matters such as infrastructure and so forth. And so I'm just not sure what you mean, consider the potential regional consenting pathways available and how we would do that.
So firstly, I've just observed that 1711, having particular regard to not only the RPS, but a plan or a proposed plan, which does actually include the regional plan.
Oh, let me just have a look at that.
So that's 1711A4.
Yeah, I suppose it does technically, at least definitionally, cover a regional plan, but...
Your point is a good one, sir, and perhaps slightly loose in my language of consenting pathways. I think my submission there is simply, and I think it was a point made earlier, I can't remember by who, but if, for example, you know, you had a project before you which, under the regional plan or even the RPS, was such an anathema to those documents, so clearly in conflict with, I think that would be a matter which appropriately Parliament would say to you, you have the obligation to have particular regard to that. And so in this case, sir, I think it is appropriate and relevant to note that when we look at the RPS and the regional plan and those other documents Commissioner Sweetman mentioned a minute ago, and what we've heard as well from the regional council themselves when they appeared before you, that, you know, while they don't have all the details yet, they don't have any real concerns, noting the site is in a highly modified area and effects could be mitigated. So simply, sir, my submission around that evidence you have before you goes to your rational consideration of having regard to the RPS and the plan, that there is a real way, clear and real way, for regional matters of this hub to be consented.
All right.
So we turn now to effects. And on that page 25, the summary, the evidence you've heard here.
Sorry, Ms. Arthur Young. Have we just moved on from the last section on consideration of regional effects?
Yes, ma'am. Apologies if you have.
I do have one question. Engari tuatahi kanui te mihi ki a koe, Ms. Arthur Young, o te rā ki a koutou te rōpū roia me ngā kaimahi katoa mō Kiwi Rail, tēnā koutou. I just want to firstly thank you and your team for your reply submissions today, and particularly acknowledging the adverse circumstances and incredible challenges you've had to endure and overcome since we last came together in Palmerston all those weeks ago due to the extended lockdown in Auckland. So I just wanted to acknowledge that. Kia ora. Just one question in relation to that last section. At paragraph 6.27, you make the point there that there is clearly a pathway through, and this is in terms of the NPSFM. But what about in relation to Te Mana o Te Wai? Does the uncertainty around Te Mana o Te Wai in terms of how cultural values will be recognised and provided for in managing freshwater resources muddy the waters, so to speak, in terms of a clear consenting pathway or the clear consenting pathway that you've identified?
Thank you, ma'am. Just give me a sec. Thank you, ma'am. In my view, and acknowledging too that I think the Regional Council, when they presented to you, noted, you know, at a high level around Te Mana o Te Wai, but they're not, you know, and when we're tasked to go into any great detail on this. I'd probably revert to my opening submissions on that point, in that As we know, look, Commissioner Sweetman mentioned it a minute ago too, this is, I don't want to say uncharted territory because it shouldn't be uncharted territory. Actually, this is catch-up stuff, isn't it, in terms of water and the management of it. But at a regional council level and at a community level, these are new planning tools, aren't they? And so I say that without making any comment on the fact that these are new concepts for some folks having to grapple with these things when they are not new concepts. So I just want to acknowledge that. But as planning concepts, they are new and they are being grappled with. And as we know, for example, in this particular region, the regional council hasn't gone through those plan-making processes that the new legislative requirements require of it. So it's still, in a strict sense, there's still some steps to go through. So consideration of Te Mana Utawa must be understood, again, in the concept, as you've said, of the MPS-FM, which does require local authorities to do a bunch of stuff to their plans and include, for example, objectives around how they and their regions will give effect to Te Mana Utawa. And that hasn't been done yet. And so I accept that, again, further to Commissioner Sweetman's observations around the uncertainty of the world we live in, and I anticipate that's precisely and appropriately where your questions are taking us, there's uncertainty for requiring authorities and developers, whether they like it or not, around the management of freshwater, wetlands, and the like. And we've even, and I'm sure you have as well, in your non-commissioner roles, as we all have, expert community and councils really grappling with this this really fast changing set of roles. And so I think I would acknowledge absolutely that there is the risk isn't the right word, but there needs to be an understanding by requiring authorities and all other developers, frankly, that while they sort of understand now what that means in terms of, say, culverting or stream management or planting or those other regional water effects, the rules could change on them over the course of the next, and will, I would anticipate, over the course of the next 5 years, such that it could be harder, more expensive, to undertake these works. And that is just appropriately the world that developers and requiring authorities need to live in now. In terms of where we are at now, though, there is, there is that gap, I suppose, and not a deliberate or inappropriate one, at where the regional council is at in terms of its plan-making processes. In my submission, it would not be open to the panel here to find that the freight hub is inconsistent with Te Mana Utawa, because the people of Manawatu have not determined, in that statutory sense, and again, I'm acknowledging the sort of slightly ridiculousness of that statement, so I acknowledge that, without the people, inputting into the RMA construct of plan making on that.
Thank you for that response. So then, just in terms of your statement there at para 6.27, would it be true to say given your response, would it still be true to say that there is clearly a pass through, or would it be more accurate to say perhaps that there is a pass through, but it's not necessarily clear at this point?
It's a really good point. Look, I think. Possibly, and I won't insult you with the semantics on clearly, because clearly that's not where your question is taking me. My submission for regionally and nationally significant critical infrastructure, there will continue to be a clear pathway through, in the sense that I haven't read anything from a high national policy document down through to what we're seeing folks on the ground grapple with, that does not accept in New Zealand critical regional and nationally significant infrastructure has to be provided for. It's an uncomfortable tension, we know that, but in that sense, I use the word clearly without apology, because my submission is this is critical infrastructure which has incredible benefits from climate change emission, freight efficiency, all that other stuff we've heard over the last 3 months. I don't know, time has no meaning, that says there will be a pathway through to navigate regional issues. Your point, however, is a very good one. Is that process clear to, say, a planner or an ecologist or the woman at the front desk of the regional council? I don't think any of those folks would say it's entirely clear how we're going to do this. It may be more expensive. It may require a heck of a lot more community and re-engagement, and folks need to be up for that. But my starting proposition is there is clearly a pathway through to consent at a regional level, the hub.
Thank you. That's very helpful.
Mm-hmm. So just to summarise all of that exchange, if I can, are you saying, there's a New Zealand phrase called, are there any showstoppers? And is that what you're saying? There doesn't appear to be any showstoppers here.
That's it, sir.
Yeah.
Not the same as it's going to be easy.
Hmm.
Or should be, because it shouldn't be.
Okay.
My clients on the call, as I say, it shouldn't be easy, but it shouldn't be easy. But no showstoppers, sir.
So you're at 7.2.
Thank you, sir. So summarising there, the evidence you have heard over the last many weeks around this place, that it is a highly modified environment. It is not pristine. It is not highly populated from a residential perspective. There are clearly existing residential properties both on and around the site, but there's also industrial development, rural uses, warehousing, and local commercial businesses. There's an existing rail line, freight line, state highway, local roading network. The site is zoned for both industrial and rural purposes. Now, I say that framing up in no way to minimize the reality that families and people live in this place, and some have long, long connections to this land. No QRL witness has sought to suggest that the hub will not result in significant change for local residents. Ms. Austin, in her evidence, recognized character and feel of the community will change as a result of the hub. Now, with that framing in mind, appropriately, this panel has honed right in on the key effects, which are what this panel has been calling the edge effects. Those effects that will transcend the boundaries of the hub. We've talked about dust, but we're going to talk about noise as one of those key ones. Lighting has been an issue, traffic, and of course, landscape. Again, trite to say, but important, a project like this will have edge effects that need to be managed well and carefully. It is not impossible. It is not possible to internalize all the effects of the hub. Now, this section of the submissions focuses on two key edge effects matters, noise and vibration and landscape. Now, I'll summarize where we got to with noise, but then again, when we get into those conditions, as you know, where, as Canadians say, the rubber hits the road on how it actually works and how those edge effects will be managed. Dr. Charles has recognized quite clearly there will be noise and vibration effects from both, obviously, construction and operation. In relation to construction, this is going to be a complex construction program. And so, as I think Mr. Skelton explained quite clearly to you in his evidence, there's there's quite complex staging around what can and should occur in what location and what time. The construction noise and vibration conditions require construction works to be undertaken to comply with construction limits as far as practicable, require preparation of a comprehensive construction noise and vibration management plan, and procedures to be followed to manage effects. And we'll go into those conditions when we get to them. But those include things like requirements to undertake preconditioned building surveys, monitoring vibration, and so on. In relation to operation, Dr. Childs has undertaken modeling to determine the noise emissions that are likely to occur as a result of operation of the hub. And that modeling was undertaken based on the concept design, which produced contours showing future projected noise, both with and without mitigation, as you know. And you'll see from those contours, and you've seen those and talked extensively with Dr. Childs about them, that the noise reduces substantially with mitigation, as one would expect, but there will still be properties that experience adverse noise effects. Just in terms of the source of noise that was used for the input of that model, now, Dr. Childs said in his acoustic assessment that noise sources were used to create a scenario that is likely to be representative of a busy hour during daytime operations of the fully developed hub. He notes that his model does not include every possible potential sound source, but he has modeled those that should represent the louder activities. And his opinion is his model is conservative. During the hearing, the chair asked a further question about that, and we confirmed with Dr. Childs that he has based one of those noise source predictions on observations at other rail yards and based his inputs on three trains continually moving throughout the site. Now, based on his observation of other rail yards, he's never seen that level of continuous rail movement throughout a site. So again, reinforces his opinion that his modeling and inputs are conservative. Now, in relation to noise from the existing operative freight line, the existing NIMT, Mr. Lloyd for the City Council is of the view that noise from the NIMT should be included in the modeling and controlled by the designation. Now, the panel canvassed this with City Council, but the NIMT, and it's covered as well in our evidence and in opening subs, but the NIMT runs adjacent to Railway Road, as you know, and is subject to an existing linear operative designation, which has no conditions on it. Also noting the district plan excludes most rail activity from the noise limits in the district plan. So as the panel will now know, this NOR proposes to designate land that is currently occupied by the NIMT, because that land is required for the construction of the noise mitigation features on the eastern boundary. So a consequence, as the panel now knows, if this NOR is confirmed, the NIMT will need to be moved into the site, and QRL will need to alter that operative NIMT designation to enable that so that the mitigation can be built. Dr. Childs has not modeled, as you know, the noise and vibration effects from the operative NIMT in his assessment.
Just on that, what is the designation description for the current NIMT?
It'll be an old one, so it probably just says for rail purposes.
So why would you have to shift the designation? Because you'd still be using it for rail purposes with just creating a bund.
Yes, we have debated this extensively in team. The operative NIMT is a linear corridor, as one would expect, which will go through precisely where the bund is. And yeah. So, strictly speaking, the NAMT could, you know, will not be running over the bund. And so that linear line will need to move down and be altered across that section of the freight hub, in my view, because otherwise the NIMT, which is that separate linear line throughout most of the country, will be in the wrong place as it traverses the hub.
Yeah. Okay.
So I summarise, and we've talked about this before, the reasons why in our submission Dr. Chow's approach is a correct one around excluding NIMT operative noise from his model. Dr. Chow's evidence is there. Will also, this is the benefits point again, which I won't belabor. Dr. Chow's evidence is there will be some benefits from altering the NIMT line away from residents and further into the site. But again, this sort of continued benefits approach, given Ms. Tancock's concern that KRL is relying heavily on those effects, or for example, excluding the adverse effects of the NIMT while grabbing the positive effects from it. The point in my submission that QRail's experts are making is there is an enabling element arising from this hub proposal in that the NIMT line must shift within to the site, and that can only be unlocked if this NOR is confirmed. But again, it's not a significant or fundamental and positive benefit that Dr. Charles is relying on. Now, in relation to mitigating noise and vibration, QRL has proposed and refined a suite of conditions in relation to that mitigation. Now, at a high-level view, and we'll get into the mitigation in a minute, but those suite of mitigation measures include construction of substantial noise barriers, development of a construction and operational noise and vibration management plan, noise management boundary, and a noise limit requiring that noise from the hub does not exceed 65 dB within any site, zone, rural, or res outside the designation extent, and a requirement to offer and install at QRL's expense noise insulation in affected dwellings. Now, that mitigation package has been substantially revised and reworked, and we'll get into that shortly.
Just on this point about the correctness of the approach, mm-hmm. Let's imagine that an airport has got a designation for an airport and one runway, and then it applies for a designation on adjoining land to make an additional runway. I suppose you can't answer this question, but it seems to me that Dr. Charles' approach would be to assess an air noise boundary or the effects only on the basis of the additional runway, because the other effects are already there and to be disregarded. And the problem that Mr. Lloyd sees with that is that you don't get the cumulative effect assessment that is necessary to understand the consequence of adding another runway to the airport. And I think when you were talking about environmental capacity or limits, wouldn't noise be the same as any other effect that you've got to consider the cumulative effect?
A couple responses there. So firstly, I think probably the airport example is a challenging one just because of the way in which noise is generated on that sort of linear takeoff and landing strip. So, for example, that almost precisely is what happened in the Auckland Airport context in the consenting or designation alteration of the existing designation for the second northern runway.
Yeah.
Because of the noise profile of planes taking off and landing in a linear way. In fact, you have less of that sort of cumulative effect because the noise effects generated from a new runway to the north of an existing runway can very clearly be modeled and understood separately, frankly, from the use of the existing runway. So it's probably a challenging example to use.
Right.
In relation here, in fact, where I think the cumulative effects response is, KiwiRail's decision to move the NIMT to provide the hub mitigation, and as a result, need to alter the existing operative designation in the future, will not only enable but require an assessment of effects, including cumulative effects, when KiwiRail goes to alter the NIMT westward. So that will require that 181 process of altering that section of the operative NIMT designation will necessitate a fulsome noise assessment, which would include, we hope, at that point, well, it would have to, because the NIMT would only move if the hub was confirmed, a consideration of the environment, which would include hub noise.
Yeah.
So again, cumulative noise effects don't fall through the cracks because they will have to be grappled with by KiwiRail when it goes to alter the NIMT.
I'll just leave it there at the moment. But I just seems to me to be sensible to at least have an you're controlling the effects of the designation, which in this case allows for a realignment of the NIMT, and yeah, I just think that the cumulative effects provides you with a picture of what the real world impacts will be.
Yeah. Two additional responses there. This doesn't allow the moving of the NIMT. It would require it, and I think that's an important distinction. And that real world assessment of cumulative effects will have to come when that alteration is done. But the other point, and we'll talk about this when we talk about the revised mitigation proposal, is whilst our clear submission is the lawful noise generated from the operative NIMT designation is appropriately excluded from the noise assessment in relation to the hub, Dr. Childs was attracted to your proposal, sir, around the bifurcation, as you call it, and we'll talk about that in a minute, around, again, that sort of real-world nod to when proposing a mitigation package for residents affected by hub noise, that acoustician doing that investigation and proposing that offer would have regard to and take into account NIMT noise when designing that mitigation package.
Yeah.
Now, when you raised that, sir, on the last day of the council hearing, council case, Dr. Charles is obviously listening very carefully, and we have been exploring that with some rigor and vim over the last couple weeks, and are proposing now, and in my submission, it's that aspect of the mitigation package is offered Ogier, that in that real world way, that mitigation put in offered to somebody, and if they accept somebody coming on their site to do the investigation and then accept the offer, will include a consideration of operative NIMT noise.
Okay.
And actually, almost at that aspect of our reply, but I just don't want to lose sight on page 30 of that additional matter, which I think Mr. Jessen for the City Council clarified that the City Council isn't seeking that anymore, but this matter of expanding the designation footprint to include more houses, and Mr. Lloyd's comment in response to the panel that people should be saved from themselves. CureRail does not endorse that approach and considers its proposal and approach in relation to the extent of the designation, but then a mitigation package, an effects management package for managing edge effects is the most appropriate and transparent. Now, in relation to that, again, this is where it actually matters for submitters who will be living next to the freight hub, and particularly on that Sangster's Road side, that it's clear that how noise and vibration is actually mitigated is obviously of real importance. So Dr. Childs and Mr. Lloyd have, throughout the hearing, continued to discuss the conditions and talk about these issues, and have refined their areas of difference and concern considerably. As I noted a minute ago, Dr. Childs, in thinking further about the mitigation package, was attracted to this bifurcation approach to dealing with noise from the NIMT, in that, as we understand it, noise from the NIMT is not controlled by the designation, but the treatment offered will take into account noise from both the hub and the operative NIMT. And as I said a minute ago, in my submission, CureRail is not required to treat dwellings for noise generated from the operative NIMT. So the revised conditions, and again, this is a high-level summary of them at the bottom of page 31, would work like this. CureRail would exclude noise from the NIMT from the noise limits, which control the day-to-day operations of the freight hub, include a trigger for investigations to be undertaken at affected dwellings based on noise projections arising from the operation of the hub, excluding the NIMT activity, where those investigations determine that treatment would be required for noise from the freight hub, CureRail would offer what would design and propose and then offer an acoustic treatment package, and then offer that treatment and include in that treatment measure a requirement to achieve an appropriate internal noise level based on the long-term future projected noise and future contours of the freight hub, as well as a future projection from noise from the NIMT. Now, in my submission, that approach appropriately respects the function of the NIMT as a separate, lawful piece of linear infrastructure, while also ensuring, in a real-world sense, as you said, sir, that those adversely affected by noise from the freight hub also receive mitigation for the effects they experience from the NIMT.
I think that was the approach that Mr. Lloyd also recommended, didn't he?
Yes, I think he would not recommend this approach, but I think he has consistently said that the noise from the NIMT should be included in the modelling itself.
But allowing for that difference, his proposal was that you do the mitigation once and properly.
Yes, sir. And that's Dr. Charles' view as well. So one matter of difference between Mr. Lloyd and Dr. Charles remains in relation to the future noise contours as a design criteria for acoustic treatment, and they're necessary for that. And both experts clearly accept and agree that treatment is based on future noise contours. It's not just the noise you hear on Monday. The question is whether those noise contours are inserted now in the designation or later. Mr. Lloyd considers that they should be included now, and based on the current contours that Dr. Charles has modeled. Dr. Charles disagrees and considers that annual and future noise modeling provides a more accurate and prudent basis on which to proceed for designing mitigation. Again, they both agree that the future noise contours are important, but Dr. Charles' view is appropriate and should be preferred in our submission. It is appropriate for the building treatment to be based on projected noise contours and noise levels from the hub once detailed design has been undertaken to ensure that KiwiRail is treating on the basis of the most accurate and up-to-date information. It otherwise risks property owners being treated for noise to a greater or lesser extent than they otherwise should. That's would be disruptive to property owners and unreasonable for KiwiRail as well if KiwiRail is mitigating for noise that in fact won't eventuate. Property owners and indeed KiwiRail should be confident that the package being offered and ultimately ideally installed will address the real world effects on them.
Mm-hmm.
Any questions again at that high or that conceptual level before we get into the wording of the conditions around noise, sir?
No, that's clear as mud. Commissioner Sweetman.
I was just going to say, Commissioner Marson, it's now 1:05.
Oh, and, yes. Sorry.
Please.
Yes. So we'll resume at 2:05. Is that all right? It's important. Thank you.
Thank you.